Welcome back, Wisconsin. If you're just joining us, I'm Maggie Dong. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Today is day 7 of Biden's top 100. This week's theme is education, and we're going to talk a bit about the educational funding crisis we seem to find ourselves in. Before I get there, however, Civic Media is running a Scani Summer Text to Win statewide giveaway. If you've been a regular listener, you've been hearing it. We're in week 2 of the giveaway. We've got all sorts of great things for you all. We've got getaways to Wisconsin Dells, Crystal Lake with a pontoon boat rental as well for you. Crystal Lake, Wisconsin Dells, Door County, and of course, Lake Geneva. Can't leave out Lake Geneva. We've got Brewers Club level tickets, all sorts of fun things for you. Now, to get entered to win, because we're going to pick winners every hour, we're going to pick winners every day, and there'll be 2 grand prize winners at the end of the 2 weeks. To enter our statewide text to win contest, just go get the Civic Media app for free from your favorite app store, and then text the word WIN, W-I-N, WIN, this hour. You've got until 4 p.m. Text the word WIN. Now, here's a little trick. You can basically get entered twice to win when you receive the confirmation text back after you've entered to win. Click on the link in that text message back to you, and you'll get entered a second time. Again, the super secret word this hour is WIN, W-I-N, in the Civic Media Scani Summer statewide text to win giveaway.
Good you luck, won! Everybody.
That's exactly right. So happy to bring on my next guest to help us understand where we are. President of the Wisconsin Policy Forum, Rob Henkin. Welcome back, Rob. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, Maggie.
Let's just dive right in. Why is educational funding in the state of Wisconsin at such a tipping point?
Well, lots of reasons, but I think clearly one of the most important reasons is that there are state-imposed revenue limits on public school districts that impact really their primary source of funding. It's their combination of state equalization aids, which are the biggest form of state aid. There are also several special forms of state aid, but this is basically regular old state aid that can be used for any instructional purpose. That amount combined with the property tax is capped. So if state aids go up, but the cap doesn't go up, then you stay the same. Conversely, if state aids go down, you can raise property taxes, but still the combined amount can only hit the cap. And in many years, over the past decade, the state revenue limits have been frozen. And so we have failed to see inflationary growth over time. There are some years where we have seen it, but over time, we have failed to see growth in these state revenue limits that has essentially equaled the consumer price index. So clearly that is a big factor. I mean, you combine that with the impacts of inflation, which arguably for school districts may be worse than for other governments in such a tight labor market, recruiting and retaining a high quality educator workforce. There's real pressure to increase wages to be able to do that. And so we have seen that have to happen. So when your primary form of aids are not growing with inflation, yet your pressure to raise compensation exceeds inflation, that can create a problem. Capital needs for schools, older school buildings that just need lots of repairs and maintenance, and repairs and maintenance is more expensive over the past several years. So again, there's lots of reasons, and you almost have to go school district by school district to really pinpoint it. But we're seeing it across the board. It's not just the Milwaukee Public Schools, which I know we're going to talk about. Just today it came out that the Wauwatosa School District in suburban Milwaukee County is looking at having to close a couple of school buildings. That's going to be very controversial because they are facing a significant budget shortfall.
You mentioned teacher salaries, Rob, and I wanted to just hone in on two specific elements of that. The first thing was that you said that when you take these two pieces of school funding and the cap that exists over the last 10 to 15 years, the school funding cap, in other words, the monies that the state legislature permits governments to spend to educate our children hasn't kept up with inflation. On a real dollar basis, how far behind are we compared to where we were 10 or 15 years ago?
So off the top of my head, Maggie, I can't answer that question statewide. I know that for the Milwaukee Public Schools, they have put out information that I in the forum have not been able to independently verify, though in some of our reports, we have spoken to this. I mean, their revenue limit amount has essentially lagged inflation over the last 15, 20 years by more than $100 million. So it's a sizable number. Again, if they had seen these major forms of state aid or this major combined form of state aid, the revenue limit amount grow over time, they would, if they had elected to tax to the max allowed, they would have in excess of $100 million more.
It's quite a big gap. You couple that with the fact that according to many media reports, we have Wisconsin teacher wages are down a considerable amount, again, on a real wage or inflation adjusted basis versus 15 years ago. It, you know, you can draw a direct line from the failure for state investment in education to keep up with inflation. You can draw a line directly from that to teacher salaries not keeping up with inflation, and hence a really extraordinary teacher shortage. We've also seen reporting in the state of Wisconsin that somewhere in the ballpark of 40% of Wisconsin teachers leave within 6 years. This is according to the Wisconsin State Journal. And we haven't even gotten to the capital expenditures. Now, I know that there's an incredible focus right now in the news about Milwaukee Public Schools. And again, we will get there. But Rob, as I understand things, this isn't unique to Milwaukee Public Schools. And in fact, in many rural counties, the problem is extremely acute simply because the school districts are so much smaller. Can you tell us a little bit about what the Wisconsin Policy Forum is seeing in rural school districts?
Yeah. So we have done analyses over the past few years looking at the teacher workforce, looking at the extent to which where we are seeing teachers leave, are they leaving for other districts versus just leaving the profession altogether? I think we are seeing that many are leaving the profession altogether, and we are seeing that urban school districts and rural districts have very similar problems here in terms of seeing lots of teacher turnover, which can obviously be very impactful in a negative way on classrooms and on students. And so, our school districts that much different from other local governments? Maybe, maybe not. But clearly, as the labor shortage grows in the state of Wisconsin, this becomes more of an issue because, quite frankly, teachers can leave for other professions. There's lots of people out there looking for workers. And Maggie, if I could just take 1 second, because I found the number I was looking for your last question.
Please.
We actually found that in 2004, the Milwaukee Public Schools received $794 million under these revenue limits. So combined property taxes and state major state aids. Had that grown with CPI in 2024, they would have received $1.3 billion. They actually received $903 million. So I understated what the growth of inflation would have meant. They're about $400 million behind.
Wow. It's just stunning.
Yep. But just one very quick caveat
please. There.
At the same time, their student population has declined by 30%. And student population is a key variable in the revenue limit formula. So clearly some capacity because of that declining population to reduce costs, but also, you know, to expect them to be able to reduce costs by that much, it would be a very tall task.
My guest this half hour is president of the Wisconsin Policy Forum, Rob Henkin. The Wisconsin Policy Forum, a nonpartisan think tank, for lack of a better word, that analyzes the questions that are so important to you and I as taxpayers and residents here in the state of Wisconsin. You mentioned that the student population has gone down over this period of time. It's interesting to observe that as a demographic trend. Certainly that is true. We're seeing that showing up in every region of the country. But what I'm curious about is that the funding formula, has it changed what the per student allotment or per the assumption that would go with, well, if it's 100 students times $2,000 per student, that spits out a certain number. But if it assumes that the cost to educate a student is constant over time, there certainly can be a point of tension, even when you see declining student population. Certainly we've heard from educational experts that we are seeing students with additional, especially mental health and other behavioral challenges, which all else being equal, a bit more expensive on a per student basis to educate. Again, my guest this half hour, president of the Wisconsin Policy Forum, Rob Henkin. We're going to dig in further to the funding challenges facing the Wisconsin education system, and we'll delve into the crisis facing MPS more after these brief messages. Your word to win in Civic Media's statewide Scotty Summer giveaway is WIN, W-I-N. Text that via the app. We've got all kinds of great prizes for you. We'll be back with more with Rob in just a moment. Keep it locked, everybody.
That boy's good.
Good and terrible.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, broadcasting live from downtown Waukesha, the WAUK. It is Civic Media's statewide Scotty Summer Text to Win. Our word this hour is WIN, W-I-N. Go ahead and download the Civic Media app for free wherever you get your apps from, and use the app to text WIN, WIN. You'll be entered to win Brewers Club level tickets, getaways to Wisconsin Dells, Lake Geneva, Door County, and Crystal Lake. That one with a pontoon boat rental included. And don't worry, we've got you covered. We're paying your gas too. Again, the word to win this hour up until 4 p.m. is WIN, W-I-N. But speaking of perhaps an organization that's not winning so much, at least in the media these days, MPS, Rob, has just an absolute nightmare on its hands. For those of you who may not have been following the story specifically, basically MPS's finances in a bit of a disaster area. The superintendent, Keith Posley, has resigned. Audits are being called for. MPS has failed to turn in required paperwork and financial reporting and audits to the state. Nearly $17 million in aid payments from the state to MPS may be withheld. What's going on here, Rob, as far as you can tell? Did I get the facts more or less right? Please correct me and add where I've gotten it wrong.
Yeah, so more or less, Maggie, and really part this whole story has still not come out yet. So
yes.
The fundamental issue here is that MPS is very, very late in terms of having audited financial statements for its last full fiscal year, which ended on June 30th of 2023. So you would have expected to see audited financial statements completed and available to the public within 3 to 4 months. Furthermore, it is a requirement by the State Department of Public Instruction for the purpose of calculating the equalization aids that we talked about before the break, that certain audited results from the previous year actually be provided to them even sooner than that. And so here we are in June, and that information has not been provided. So why, what's going on here? Why could that be? Well, clearly there are disagreements between MPS financial administrators and their external auditors, the firm Baker Tilly. There's an inability to complete the audit stems from the fact that either A, there is still some disagreement over certain very important accounting items, or possibly that it's just there is a demand for further documentation from the auditors, and it could go back into, you know, resurrecting certain accounting procedures from many previous years, and it's taking a long time, but this is just an awfully long time. So the bottom line is, one other factor here is that the state is questioning some of the spending numbers that MPS submitted that were used to calculate its state aid payment in the current fiscal year. And if indeed they are suggesting that those numbers were overstated, which created higher aid payments than MPS really should have received, which could result in a take back. And we don't know for sure about that yet, but that's certainly very serious in a district that has some financial challenges.
It all comes on the heels of a nearly $250 million referendum approved by the voters in the city of Milwaukee in additional taxation to help fund MPS. Now, what we all understand to date is that while that referendum was going through the process of getting on the ballot and was up for a vote, the school board and the superintendent and those working in the financial controls office of MPS would have been aware of this problem, this failure to complete their audited financials. And nonetheless, no disclosures were made to taxpayers and voters. I have a question, Rob, about the governance here, because I think sometimes it's a bit hard for us regular folks to understand who exactly is in charge here. We know that there's a superintendent of the public school system in Milwaukee, as is the case in many school districts statewide. We also understand that there is a school board. Would it be fair to say that the school board shares responsibility with former Superintendent Posley to ensure, as an oversight matter, that the audited financials are completed? Could someone say it seems that the former superintendent has taken a lot of the blame, but there's a whole number of people on the school board who also shared in that responsibility?
Yep. So it's a great question. You've worked in government, as have I. It's a tough answer. So it really comes down to how much should an elected school governance body trust the appointed administrators that it puts in place? And so there was discussion at a December 2023 board meeting about the audit process, because there were actually problems with the 2022 audit. And so they came, there was a requirement by the school board, we want to report back in December, we want to know if those problems have been resolved, and we want to know, we want an update. And at that time, the school board was assured that the 22 problems had been addressed, and that 2023 was going much better than 2022. So the question is, should they have continued to ask questions subsequent to that? And you can certainly argue they can. But for us, so we, the forum, we put out an analysis of the MPS budget 3 days before the DPI letter was sent. And for us, we didn't know about the tardiness. We didn't know about the state requirements being missed. All we knew was we could not assess NPS's fiscal condition because we were not able to examine the 23 audited financial statements to see how NPS had ended its previous fiscal year, which to us is just a fundamental thing that we do in assessing what's being requested for the next year. How'd you end the previous year? And so the fact that nobody was questioning that, I think that's troublesome.
My guest this half hour, President of the Wisconsin Policy Forum, Rob Henkin. I'll put it in my own language. To try to budget for next year for any government agency without a decent closing of the books from your prior year is downright nuts. It ain't the way we do business. Thanks for helping us understand, as always, Rob. I really appreciate your time. Rob Henkin, President of the Wisconsin Policy Forum, friend of the show, and now each and every one of your friends as well, helping us understand. We're going to take a couple of really important messages. We'll be back. What do sharks and electric vehicles have to do with one another? We'll crack that nut after these brief messages. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, your Scotty Summer statewide text to win word of the hour is win. Text that via the app. When you get a text message back saying we got it, click on the link. You'll get entered again to win one of many fabulous prizes. Don't go anywhere.
Baby, do you know what that's worth? Ooh, heaven is a place on earth. They say in heaven, love comes first. We'll make heaven our place on earth. Ooh, heaven is a place on earth.
You know, with like a Sacred Heart of Jesus flag, or the other heaven flag, whatever. We'll get there, not to worry, in due time, right, Brian? Lots of sound this afternoon. I've been teasing the Trump shark sound because I don't even know how to explain it. Yeah, I think it's supposed to be about electric vehicles, Brian.
I think it's an anti-battery message.
Those batteries.
The heat can, I mean... To be clear, just to set the stage here, it wasn't Nevada. It was 10 billion thousand million degrees, and six people went to the hospital because of it. So there's a good chance that dude's head was fried.
Listen, I can handle about, 2 minutes of direct sun exposure if it's 80 degrees or more before I start melting down.
Yeah,
I'm hot thinking about it right now. Exactly. You want to join our conversation? We're going to be talking about the shark speech. We're going to be talking about Martha Ann Alito, Justice Alito, Justice Roberts, all of it for the last half hour of the show. Get your 2 cents in here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Maggie Dawn. He is Brian Kelly. 855-752-4842. 855-752-4842. Don't forget, it is the hour of text to win in the Scotty Summer Giveaway. Weekend packages to Wisconsin Dells, Crystal Lake with a pontoon, Lake Geneva, and Door County. We got Brewers Club level tickets. One winner this hour, one winner today, and two grand prize winners before the week is out. To do that, you're going to text the word WIN, W-I-N. That is WIN as in you are a winner and Donald Trump is a convicted felon, via the Civic Media app, which you can get for free from your favorite app store. Okay, so Donald Trump was in Nevada, as Brian was saying, this past weekend, gave one of his, what I think can only be called by now, sort of trademark rambling off the teleprompter speeches, and walked himself into what can only be described as a very random monologue. I mean, we've got...
Random. This is many times he's brought this exact same subject up.
So Stormy Daniels apparently has made it pretty clear that Trump is obsessed with sharks and has a deathly fear of dying by shark attack. He's mentioned it before in at least, I guess, one speech before. So, yeah, not totally random.
I'm afraid of sharks, but that's why I don't go in the water when there's sharks around.
Right. I'm thinking, Brian, we need to come up with a civic media Donald Trump bingo card that has things like Hannibal Lecter, sharks, and other seeming non sequiturs that all of you can check off.
All I can tell you is that whoever's got like Sicario 2, Day of the Soldad on their bingo card is going to win a lot, because a lot of his foreign policy, especially like drug policy, foreign border policy, is based on the Sicario series.
Yeah, he just.
I wish I was lying about that. No, I wish I pulled that out of thin air, but it's a true thing. He said in this movie Sicario I saw, and that's why we're doing this thing for the nation.
I wonder if he saw Argo and he's like, I know how to rescue the Israeli hostages. I saw Argo. We'll send a fake film crew. I'm sure it'll work.
I don't want to make light of that thing, but. The most amusing thing in the world would absolutely be to hear not. This idiot talk about how he would rescue hostages or how he would deal with terrorists in any sort of way.
Because of things like this, Brian, shall we take a listen to Donald Trump in Nevada just 2 days ago?
So I said, let me ask you a question. And he said, nobody ever asked this question. And it must be because of MIT, my relationship to MIT. Very smart. He goes, I say, what would happen if the boat sank from its weight and you're in the boat and you have this tremendously powerful battery and the battery is now underwater and there's a shark that's approximately 10 yards over there? By the way, a lot of shark attacks lately. Do you notice that? A lot of shark. I watched some guys justifying it today. Well, they weren't really that angry. They bit off the young lady's leg because of the fact that they were not hungry, but they misunderstood who she was.
Yeah, big these shark coming in.
He said there's no problem with sharks. They just didn't really understand a young woman swimming now who really got decimated and other people too. A lot of shark attacks. So I said, so there's a shark 10 yards away from the boat, 10 yards or here. Do I get electrocuted? If the boat is sinking, water goes over the battery, the boat is sinking. Do I stay on top of the boat and get electrocuted? Or do I jump over by the shark and not get electrocuted? Because I will tell you, he didn't know the answer. He said, you know, nobody's ever asked me that question. I said, because I think it's a good question. I think there's a lot of electric current coming through that water. But you know what I'd do if there was a shark or you get electrocuted? I'll take electrocution every single time.
I...
She's like, well, what is that?
What do you do with that?
My head is just exploding. I think I'm like just lost 3 IQ points.
Yeah, like big shark is in there and going, like there's a big, like he's angry at the shark lobby for trying to defend sharks by saying they bit you because they thought you were a different animal. Like he's mad at the shark. Like he's mad at Shark Week for saying that sharks could possibly be anything besides horrible.
I think we need like a series of t-shirts that's like, I stand with Joe Biden and sharks. I mean, for real.
Me, what? Sharks, and Joe Biden. He just, it's more because he probably likes shark fin soup.
Oh.
Actually, no, he doesn't. It's not McDonald's or KFC. He's not going to try it.
He doesn't eat any. He's not a pescatarian. Let's just be very clear about that. He, from the 414, Donald Trump sounds like Grandpa Simpson. Yes, that is absolutely perfect.
That's literally the clip I am grabbing at this second.
As we speak on the radio, here's my favorite part.
One trick is to tell him stories that don't go anywhere. Like the time I caught the ferry over to Shelbyville, I needed a new heel for my shoe. So I decided to go to Morganville, which is what they call Shelbyville in those days. So I tied an onion to my belt, which was the style at the time. Now, to take the ferry cost a nickel. And in those days, nickels had pictures of bumblebees on them. Give me 5 bees for a quarter, you'd say. Now, where were we? Oh, yeah. The important thing was that I had an onion on my belt.
Sharks.
Sharks.
Let's play some more Donald Trump. I mean, let's hear it again, shall we? Just the beginning part, Brian.
Sorry. I really believe I'd run in there even if I didn't have a weapon.
That's a different one. I moved it.
That's all right.
Here we go.
So I said, let me ask you a question. And he said, nobody ever asked this question. And it must be because of MIT, my relationship to MIT. Very smart.
Okay. That right there. Here is what's happening while he begins to say that. He's trying to slam electric vehicles. Electric vehicles become boats. Electric boats with huge, huge, massive batteries that'll maybe make the boat sink. And he's talking to a boat guy. So he says to the boat guy, hey, boat guy, I got a question about the big battery and if it's going to make it sink and the sharks. And the boat guy's like, I never asked you or heard that question from anyone before because it's insane. And Donald Trump thinks to himself and says out loud to an enormous room filled with people, that's because of the MIT connection. Because I'm so smart.
And it must be because of MIT, my relationship to MIT. Very smart.
He's saying that the reason that the boat guy has never heard this insane, rambling, Grandpa Simpson-esque question is because Donald Trump has some what? Relationship undefined with MIT, and therefore Donald Trump is so smart. He's the only one to have ever thought of this boat, enormous battery, electric vehicle, shark, rock in a hard place. Do I get electrocuted or attacked by a shark question?
It sounds like when your grandparents try and talk to you about how that dumb phone is being dumb and everything and dumbity dumb dumb. But wait, can you show me how to call someone? Hey, wait, how do I get anywhere? How do I do anything? How does anything happen? But those phones are stupid. I hate them all.
Oh. A lovely texter from the 262 reminding us that his uncle was a professor at MIT. So that's the MIT relationship, which must make Donald Trump and his questions genius.
Listen, my grandpa's in the College Football Hall of Fame. You know what I wasn't good at? Playing football very well. I mean, I was okay, but like not good. It's funny how that like, and that's like a direct line. Like it's not like a cousin or an uncle or something.
The texter from the 414 that gave us Grandpa Simpson, yes, you get the gold star today for nailing it on the head. And of course, all of this within the context of, you know what's scary? I'm not worried about Joe Biden sort of garbling the end of a sentence or stumbling over words. I'm worried about the shark attack, massive battery, I'm so smart, MIT, non sequitur rambling, I have no idea what he's talking about, guy. Oh, and the guy that has no respect for the legal system, won't respect jury verdicts, pardons all of his friends and people who tried to overthrow the U.S. government.
You know, I have one simple request. And that is to have sharks with frickin' laser beams attached to their heads.
That's the guy I think Donald Trump is trying to be.
Oh, it's as if Dr. Evil and Grandpa Simpson had a baby who became president.
A baby? Let's stress on the baby part.
You know, with a diaper and a nook. And just in case you don't believe that Donald Trump wants to pardon lots of people, should we take a little listen on the pardons for January 6th insurrectionists? Sure, let's.
If I become president someday, if I decide to do it, I will be looking at them very, very seriously for pardons. Very, very seriously.
If I run and if I win, we will treat those people from January 6th fairly. We will treat them fairly. And if it requires pardons, we will give them pardons.
You know, because respecting juries and things, we'll just pardon them. Yeah. Unbelievable. We got to keep the shark cut around forever because it's right up there with the Hannibal Lecter ramble. Get your bingo cards ready. Sicario, Hannibal Lecter, sharks. You know, you got a good row or diagonal started. This is not the T version of the bingo card. It is the traditional bingo card. five across, five down, or five in a diagonal. You may not use the bonus middle square because Trump says so many incredibly stupid, insane, Grandpa Simpson-esque, Dr. Evil type things. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't forget to text via the app this hour. Text the word win, and you will be a winner. We'll be back with, Supreme Court Justice Alito and his wife talking about how biased they are and how he absolutely is going to recuse himself. No, that's not what the sound is. But we'll listen to it anyways, because it's important. Back with more in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
So there's a shark 10 yards away from the boat.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. He is Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It is our summer statewide text to win contest giving away Brewers Club level tickets. We've got getaways to Wisconsin Dells, Crystal Lake, Lake Geneva, and beautiful Door County. To win, text the word WIN, W-I-N, this hour before 4 p.m. via the Civic Media app, and you will be entered. Once you get a reply text, click on the link there in that reply text, and you will be entered to win again. We're going to give away one prize this hour, one prize today, and two grand prize winners before the end of the week. Good luck to all. So a woman went to a conservative Catholic event, a gala, if you will, posed as someone who she was not, and got to talk to Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito and his wife, Martha Ann. She also talked to Chief Justice John Roberts, and she basically baited them. She asked leading questions. She suggested she was on their side, that she was conservative and a conservative Catholic, and that she supports Samuel Alito, and how terrible have the Alitos been treated. She baited them. She misrepresented who she was. She lied her butt off. And Samuel Alito and Martha Ann Alito fell for it. They said things that no sitting Supreme Court justice should say, that should be intolerable in a democracy. And they stand, the comments by Justice Alito and his wife, Martha Ann, stand in sharp contrast to the comments made by Chief Justice John Roberts. Now, I'm going to summarize what they said, then we're going to listen to their actual words. And here's the summary of what Justice Alito said: that our country is basically locked in a war over morality and only one side can win, that there's no real way to find compromise to collaboratively solve this problem. He basically said there's going to be a winner and a loser, and we're in a fight over the moral soul of the nation. His wife, meanwhile, was slamming the LGBTQ community up and down. Let's take a listen. Let's start with Alito saying that it is not our role to judge morality. Now, this sounds like something a Supreme Court justice should say. But folks, this wasn't from this past weekend's gala. This was from 2023. Alito in 2023, please, Brian.
Like, this is like the last bastion of, I think, like, public trust. And like, how do we get back to that?
I wish I knew. I don't know. It's easy to blame the media, but I do blame them. Because they do nothing but close us. And so they have really eroded trust in the court. I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, ordinary people, ordinary isn't the right word. American citizens in general need to work on this to try to heal this polarization because it's very dangerous. I do believe it's very dangerous.
Heal the polarization.
Yep. Heal the polarization. That's Samuel Alito in 2023. Well, here's Samuel Alito on June 3rd.
As a Catholic and as someone who, like, really cherishes my faith, I don't know that we can negotiate with the left in the way that, like, needs to happen for the polarization to end. I think that it's a matter of, like, winning.
I think you're probably right. One side or the other is going to win. I don't know. I mean, there can be a way of living together peacefully, but it's difficult, you know, because there are differences on fundamental things that really can't be compromised. So it's not like we're going to split the difference.
And that's what I'm saying. I think that the solution really is, like, winning the moral argument. Like, people in this country who believe in God have got to keep fighting for that to return our country to a place of godliness.
Oh, I agree with you. I agree with you.
Brief summary, and don't worry, folks, we got tomorrow. We'll talk more about the Alitos and the difference between what you just heard from Justice Samuel Alito on June 3rd. What he said there is that one side or the other is going to win. And while there can be a way of living together peacefully, it's difficult because there are differences on fundamental things that can't really be compromised. Folks, breaking that down into its most basic, what a Supreme Court justice of the United States said was that we can no longer live peacefully together because one side or the other has to win, and that we have to win and return our country to a place of godliness. You may believe in God, but the last time I checked, religious freedom and the freedom to be free from religion were fundamental American values. Maybe someone should remind Justice Samuel Alito and his wife, Martha Ann, of that fact. Freedom is what we believe in here.
Yeah, I'm calling founding fathers on that one. I totally call founding fathers. The entire problem with the monarchy is that the divine right of kings was ordained by God. And so as a king, you can basically say anything and assume that it's the will of God. That's the entire problem with all of it. That's the whole reason why we have checks and balances. It's the entire reason why we have the government that we have in the first place. It's the entire reason why these guys got together and said, hey, England, get out of here. I call founding fathers. I'm done.
Yeah, that. You know, textualism and the Constitution, blah, blah, blah. We'll start here tomorrow, Brian, I think. A little bit more of the Alitos. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been The Maggie Dawn Show. Text the word WIN, W-I-N, via the app to be entered to win. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, because it's always better when we stand together.
I'll take electrocution every single time.